Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll meet the new commanding general of the 34th Infantry Division, Red Wolves, talk to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Veterans Homelessness Coordinator. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
Our differences and our diversity are what make your Minnesota National Guard strong. Regardless of our differences in gender, sexual orientation or identity, race or religion, we are united in our service. What matters in the Minnesota National Guard is the content of your character, your love of country, and your devotion to serve the people of our state and nation. In our Minnesota National Guard, there are more than 13,000 brave, hardworking, and dedicated men and women who come from many different walks of life. Soldiers and airmen of every creed, color, and background imaginable serve together with distinction and honor. Despite our differences, we wear the same uniform, serve the same state, and salute the same flag. In the Minnesota National Guard, there are pilots and military police, mechanics and cooks, logistics specialists, and cyber experts. These brave soldiers and airmen foster a culture of acceptance, dignity, and respect. Regardless of our differences, together we become a team, standing shoulder to shoulder to protect our great state and the United States of America, be it here at home, overseas, or wherever the call may take us. Our differences and our diversity are what make your Minnesota National Guard strong.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
The Rosemont-based 34th Red Bull Infantry Division provides training and readiness oversight for 10 National Guard brigades with a total of more than 23,000 soldiers across Minnesota and eight other states. In January of 2017, Major General John Jensen took command of the division. In November, Jensen was selected by Governor Mark Dayton to become the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, and the division finished last year with a new commander, Major General Ben Correll, an Iowa Guardsman who led the division as the headquarters prepares to deploy to Kuwait and Jordan this fall. And joining me in the studio now is Major General Ben Correll. Sir, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Tom, it's great to be here today. It's a beautiful day. I'm so pleased to, number one, command the Red Bull Division, and number two, have the opportunity to meet you and speak with your audience this afternoon.
Well, General, you've had a pretty exciting 3 or 4 months. You've got to take over as the division commander, commanding general of the infamous 34th Infantry Red Bull Division, and you got promoted, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Since I've been a young kid, I've dreamed about being in the military for many years. I thought being a company commander would be a lofty goal, and as I've risen through the ranks, the opportunity to serve as a Red Bull through most of my career, and now realize that I am Red Bull 6, the division commander for the 34th Infantry Division, is a dream come true.
And General, I understand you and our new Adjutant General, General Jensen, go way back to when you were lieutenants together.
We do. Both came out of the state of Iowa. General Jensen and I served as lieutenants. He served on one side of the state, on the western side of the state, where he grew up, and I was a lieutenant in the eastern side of the state, and we would occasionally meet in the middle. And our careers have been intertwined over the years. There's a lot of respect, hard work that we've done together, and a lot of good things that we've done together for both Iowa and Minnesota over the years.
And, sir, I understand you both started out as enlisted soldiers. He was a combat medic, and I understand that you were enlisted for a few years before you were commissioned.
That's right. I joined, actually, if I step back a little bit, as a kid, 15 years old, I wanted to be a Marine. And so I found one of those postcards. I sent it off to the Marine Corps, and they were kind enough to send me a note back and said, contact us when you're a high school graduate and 18 years old. And so by that time, it just didn't work out. I was a little bit older when I enlisted, 24 years old, listed as a brand new private into the Iowa Army National Guard in Owine, Iowa. I was always motivated, always wanted to be part of the military. Probably the biggest motivation was at that time they offered me a $5,000 cash bonus incentive to join. I had three young kids, and they were always hungry, so I was looking for that money. Obviously, it's gone way past that over my 32-year career, but that's kind of what got me in the door. And I knew I would make a good soldier, and I've worked hard, continued to challenge myself along the path here. But initially, get me in the door as a young private. I served as a all the way up to a sergeant before I went to the officer candidate school and got my commission as a second lieutenant.
We're speaking with Major General Ben Correll, who is the commanding general of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I understand that you were deployed several times to Iraq, Afghanistan, and Romania.
Yes. This summer, I completed my fifth deployment. That was in Romania. My first deployment was to Saudi Arabia as a major. I commanded a company task force where we provided security to Patriot missile batteries as part of the Operation Southern Watch. My second deployment was as a battalion commander. I deployed the 1st and 133rd Infantry Battalion out of eastern Iowa to the Sinai of Egypt. Did the same mission that the 2nd 135 out of Minnesota recently returned from this past fall. My third deployment was with the 1st Brigade Combat Team out of Minnesota. That's where I met Major General retired Dave Elisario, who was the 1st Brigade Commander at the time. And so I was a battalion commander for him for this long deployment. We spent 6 months at Camp Shelby, Mississippi. We spent about 16 months in country in Iraq and then returned back home. My fourth deployment was as the 2nd Brigade Commander of the 34th Infantry Division, where I took the brigade to Regional Command East, Afghanistan, where we were a battle space owner conducting combat operations. And then I deployed by myself as an individual deployment to Bucharest, Romania, where I served as a deputy commander for a NATO multinational division that was just a startup. And they're on track to build up capability of our allies within Eastern Europe.
Sir, that all sounds like wonderful experience for someone that it just took over as the legendary division commander of the Red Bulls. Now, sir, I understand that that's a weekend position as division commander, but you're full-time still with the Iowa National Guard.
That's right. So this is a traditional guardsman assignment as the division commander for the 34th Infantry Division. My full-time job, I work for the Iowa National Guard as the deputy adjutant general. I came back in September this past year. I was recalled by Governor Reynolds from Iowa, and she had asked me to take over this role, serving the Iowa National Guard on a full-time basis there.
General, I want to take a look at the division because I think it confuses some of our listeners. The Minnesota National Guard is comprised of about 13,000 soldiers, some of whom are part of the division, but they're not all part of the Red Bulls.
Right.
And then the division is made up of more than just the Minnesota National Guard. It's the Iowa National Guard and guardsmen and women from several other states. How does that all come together? You still report to the Adjutant General, correct?
It is complicated. So as a reserve soldier, a member of the National Guard, we serve in a non-federal status the majority of the time. So our traditional soldiers, they're called Title 32. And they respond to the adjutant general under the commander in chief, which is the governor. Governor Dayton is the commander in chief of the Minnesota National Guard. He has the authority to call out our members when needed, and we do that time and time again. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with some of the actions that we take, whether it's assisting during a snowstorm, whether it's opening an armory, whether it's assisting for a fire within the state, or as what's coming up down the road is assistance to local law enforcement for the Super Bowl that will be held here in the Minneapolis area. So he has the ability to command and control the members of the Minnesota Guard within a state active duty formation. So outside of Minnesota, each governor has the authority over those state's forces. There's only 8 National Guard divisions in the National Guard construct. That means that there's 54 states, territories, and 1 district. Many of those don't have a division headquarters that they report to. So a division is the highest level at the tactical authority that provides resources, that consists with training. So many of these other formations are looking for higher level relationships. And so we have about a dozen states that fall under us as a line for training that we provide assistance to throughout the year.
So, sir, for the eight divisions across the United States report, in essence, to the Guard Bureau, but they're made up of National Guard troops from multiple states.
That's
and that's what what presents the confusion a little bit.
That's correct. So typically, a division would be called up, similar to what we anticipate this fall for the 34th, in a federal status, and then different formations will fall underneath the division. And so any one of those eight divisions at any time could be called up for federal duty to provide command and control, mission command to subordinate units. And that's really what a division headquarters does.
Very good, sir. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Major General Ben Correll, who's the commanding general of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Major General Ben Correll, who's the commanding general of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. And he's also the Assistant Adjutant General of the Iowa National Guard on a full-time basis. And, of course, when General Jensen left as division commander and got promoted to be Minnesota's Adjutant General, then General Correll was picked to be the next Red Bull Infantry Division Commander. And, General, I'm sure you look back at prior division commanders. There's quite a list of general officers there that I'm sure you've known quite a few of them.
It's pretty rare air. Division's been around over 100 years. We celebrated our 100-year anniversary this past summer. I look on the wall. They have the photos of every division commander and every division command sergeant major, and I recognize quite a few. And so never thought I'd see my face hanging in that row, but it's sitting there today. And I recognize the responsibility and the challenges that go with that, and I'm ready for that. I'm ready for this task.
Sir, going back to over that 100 years, we've talked about the Red Bulls in World War II, more days in frontline combat than any other unit in World War II. And of course, the readiness and the training that they've been through just in the 7 years that we've been telling their stories is incredible. But the last 2 or 3 years, the division and the Minnesota National Guard are kind of right at the top of the training rotation. You've been to warfighters. You've been to the National Training Center out in California. And last year, a couple of deployments over to Europe.
Right. Well, the Red Bull Division has a long, proud history. And there's a reason. There's a reason that we get picked, we get selected, we're asked to do these things. And that is because they know of our history, and they know that we will accomplish the mission. And we always have. When you go somewhere for a training challenge, I feel that you lay that Red Bull patch down on the table. Those that have gone before you are looking back up at you. And at the end of the exercise, at the end of the event, you want to be able to pick that patch up, put it back on, and walk away with your head held high, full of pride. And we are, time after time, again and again, we're able to do that.
And, sir, when you've got that readiness status that high and the expectations are that high, you get called on for other missions.
Well, that's right. The people of America who... We're able to do what we do because of their tax dollars. The citizens of Minnesota, the expectation is their money's not being wasted, and it's being used for a reason. And so, with that, our responsibility as members of the military is either to fight and win the wars that our national command authority asks us to do, or train and prepare so we can be successful if we are called forward. And that's what we're focused on, is training, repetitions, increasing the stress and the rigor through the training process, so that as we do get asked to go somewhere in harm's way, we're able to do the things that our country needs us to do, do the things that the parents and loved ones back home expect us to do with our soldiers, and bring them back home.
It's all about training and being ready, sir.
That's right.
General, I understand this summer the 34th Infantry Division is going to conduct a division warfighter exercise. Can you tell us about that?
It's going to be a busy summer. It's already starting for the division headquarters. A warfighter exercise for a division or a corps is really the culminating training event within the cycle of preparation of these are the things that that the Army expects us to do to fight and win. And so it's about collective task. It's about bringing the capacity of the division staff up so they can effectively do what it is that a division headquarters does, and that is to take a higher level order, distill it down into a tactical plan that can be executed by our subordinate brigades, and then we provide mission command to ensure that the intent of the order is being followed, and then to recognize if something's changed in the on the battlefield, that we can take an action left or action right and change the plan in stride to be faster, smarter than our adversary.
In general, one of the things that we've observed in the last 7 years is every year you lose some officers and some NCOs to retirement. And when that happens, it's next man or woman up. And you constantly have to be training and putting these new officers and these new NCOs in positions where they can prove themselves anew.
That's right. So that's just the nature of our business. And there's no one individual that is so important within the process that you can't continue without them. We've done numerous training events over the past several years to get us prepared for this. As we look forward to this warfighter exercise, we have continued training events that will progressively lead to the culminating training event that will take bits and pieces of what it is that we'll do in the overall warfighter exercise this summer at Camp Atterbury, Indiana, that will prepare us to be successful. And that includes not only operational planning, but it includes actually dropping down our facilities and making them mobile and move them, because you have to be able to move on the battlefield.
In general, it looks like it's going to just keep getting busier, because I understand this fall you're preparing for another deployment to Kuwait and Jordan.
Well, at this point, we've been notified by the Army. We have been alerted by the Army to prepare to do this. My experience has been there's no sure bet about getting on an aircraft and going somewhere. And you know from your experience as well with your time in the military, things change on short notice. We are preparing to do this. So as we complete the warfighter exercise in June of this year, we'll come back, we'll reconfigure the headquarters, and we will focus on the mission that we believe that we will conduct as we move into the September timeframe. So there's a series of exercises that we'll do prior to any mobilization. There'll be a period of time after a mobilization where we will continue to prepare, hone our skills, and be ready to go forward where and if we're asked to do that.
General, one of the other things that I've noticed in 7 years of telling these stories is that every one of your soldiers that I meet that's been notified that there might be a deployment coming up are anxious to go. They want to get the experience. It's part of their career. It's part of their ability to get promoted and move up and move into new positions and new jobs. And I think everyone that's in the Minnesota National Guard or Iowa National Guard or in your division knows that deployments are going to be part of the future. But they all look just excited about going, sir.
Well, this is not the old National Guard. We are an operational force. The Army has not been this small since prior to World War II, and they count on us. We are all one team. And so there's many soldiers within these formations that have deployed multiple times. But there's also, as you mentioned, because of retirements and because of new members coming in, there's some of our soldiers who have not deployed before. The great thing about it is they're excited because they're actually going to get to do the job that they've been trained to do and do the things that they signed up to do to be a citizen soldier. Now, most of them don't want to do it full time, or they would have joined the active service. But the opportunity to deploy with their comrades, deploy as a Red Bull soldier, it's a big deal. And we will have them ready. We will have them prepared to do the job that we're asked to do, and we will take care of each other, and we will take care of our families as we move forward for this.
General, it has to be an honor to command such a division as the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division and all those great soldiers.
Thanks, Tom. I pinch myself every day, but it motivates me to know this is a big deal. I've got a lot of responsibility, but it is truly a privilege and an honor to be the commander of the historic Red Bull Division.
General, we got about 30 seconds left. You've served from a E1 soldier to a 2-star general.
I have.
And we've got listeners all over the state. If they were thinking about joining the Minnesota National Guard or the Iowa National Guard, what would you have to say to them, sir?
I would say that whatever your goals are in life, if you believe in it, if you work hard, you know, when I started out, I didn't intend on going from a private to a two-star general. I wanted to be a lieutenant platoon leader, and that was my goal at the time. And after I got to be that, I wanted to be a company commander, and then I wanted to be a battalion commander. But it doesn't happen by magic. It happens by hard work. It happens by dedication, and it happens by the team that you build around you. It's not just Ben Correll that makes this. It's the people that have served with me and worked hard for me that I stand on their shoulders and serve today, and I'll never forget that.
General, I wish you all the best luck commanding the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today in the studio on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's been my privilege.
That was Major General Ben Correll, commanding general of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division on Minnesota Military Radio.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we will check in with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on veterans homelessness. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelto.
Here at Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, we continue to prepare for the upcoming legislative session. Last year's session helped the department's reposition itself in order to better serve Minnesota's veterans and their families. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is a unique state agency because of our nonpartisan nature. It is important now, more than ever, to focus on our mission and what we need to do as a department to educate our state leaders. Doing so will allow us to work together to assist Minnesota's heroes. As a country and as a state, we have made certain commitments to our veterans. It's important that we keep good on these promises. To stay up to date on both federal and state legislative updates during the session, visit MinnesotaVeteran.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelto. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Now here's our military producer, Sergeant First Class Ben Houtkooper, speaking with Ben Wilson from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs about veterans homelessness.
Thanks, Tom. So joining us now is Ben Wilson of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Ben is an Army veteran of the Iraq War and is currently employed as the Homeless Veteran Coordinator with Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Ben, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much for having me today.
So, Ben, you're here to talk about, you know, the veteran homelessness in Minnesota. You know, what is the basis for the commitment to our homeless veterans?
Yeah, so there's a few kind of main things that really, I guess, get to the heart of the commitment. The governor's or the mayor's challenge, which is a national initiative through USICH, VA, and HUD to get as many mayors as possible throughout the entire country to basically sign on, create local leadership to prevent and end homelessness among veterans in their communities at the most local levels. And then once they have been able to succeed with veteran homelessness, to apply the lessons learned to all other populations.
Because we heard a little bit about that maybe a few years ago with the Minneapolis mayor, and I think St. Paul as well, you know, they made that commitment. How has that transition been with the new mayors?
Yeah, right now we're actually working with the Association of Minnesota Mayors to try to reinvigorate that challenge throughout the state. I will get an opportunity to speak in front of that group here coming up in April, so I'm excited for that.
So big picture, Minnesota veteran homelessness, you know, we've seen the numbers that, you know, there are now 40 out of our 87 counties in Minnesota that have, you know, quote unquote, ended veteran homelessness. But I don't think we can really end it. So what do they mean by that?
Yeah, correct. So what they mean by ending veteran homelessness is that they've put robust systems in place to prevent a homeless episode from happening whenever possible. But if that episode of homelessness does occur, that it's rare, brief, and non-recurring. So the USICH, the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, Veterans Affairs, and Housing and Urban Development all created these benchmarks. And the three communities mentioned, or the 40 counties mentioned throughout the state, have basically through federal review process, have shown that they have those robust systems in place to house a veteran within about 90 days after point of identification of a housing crisis.
Wow. So it comes down to a member in that community saying, I know this homeless veteran, and then within 90 days, they're in a home.
Absolutely, yeah. Being able to provide them shelter immediately if they're unsheltered, and then from that point, working on a housing stability plan to the point where they are signing that lease and moving in.
So when we talk about homelessness, you know, I'm from suburban, urban Minnesota, but I hear that it looks a lot different when you get out into greater Minnesota. You know, what does it look like out there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think everyone has that sort of stereotypical image of what the homeless veteran might look like, you know, kind of a ragged guy sitting on the street corner panhandling for change. It's, you know, episodes of homelessness can look like anything, and every situation is very unique. So, you know, that may be what it does look like for some folks that are in more of an urban area. When you get out into greater Minnesota, it's really hard to identify those individuals who are experiencing homelessness due to the fact that there's limited capacity for shelter, or shelter capacity, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So folks end up couch hopping or doubling up with a friend or a family member in order to just keep a roof over their head.
What do you find are the challenges that you don't see necessarily in the urban populations that you see more in those rural areas? Is it identification of the veterans?
I would say the biggest challenge is identification and also transportation for veterans out in greater Minnesota to be able to go to appointments at the VA to seek out the help or get connected with the resources that are available to them. You know, the further away they are without transportation, it makes it much more difficult.
Mm-hmm. But there are transportation options out there. You know, we've seen the disabled American veterans. They obviously have the transportation program in there. Are there resources like that kind of help you combat those challenges?
Yeah, I believe it's getting better, especially, you know, amongst non-veteran specific, partnerships in those communities that are creating other or more capacity to deal with those transportation issues. So
what can individuals do to help with veteran homelessness?
Well, there's a lot that individuals can do, just creating, I guess, that sense of right in your own community, you know, doing whatever you can to address the issues that are affecting your community directly, because every community is unique across our state. If we can address those unique circumstances at the most local level, we can impact the most change, especially amongst our veterans. A lot of times it's just a matter of pulling groups together who have a shared, a common goal to end veteran homelessness, getting everyone at the table together, and then seeing how you can align your resources together to utilize them most efficiently toward the same end goal.
And you have all those groups right now from what we were talking about before the show.
We work with many of them, yes. And I'm sure there are others out there that we would love to partner with even further. Mm-hmm. And I will continue to seek them out as much as I can. So,
what kind of groups are you looking for?
Even at the most local levels, we look to partner with American Legions, VFWs, any type of, you know, civic organization, or really any interested faith-based organization who's interested in helping with the goal to end veteran homelessness throughout the state.
So who have been some of the big players when it comes to veteran homelessness and solving it? I know, you know, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is a key player. Also, you know, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. Who else is out there that's really doing some good work?
Yeah, we also work very closely with federal VA, their homeless programs, many other nonprofits and private organizations, philanthropy. Also, the Office to Prevent and End Homelessness has been a really large contributor to ending our veteran homelessness, and the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness as well.
So So what can, you know, what it, to take me through the process really quickly, you know, what is it that, that from you, the time that you get a phone call saying, I have this, this homeless veteran that I know about, can you help them? What is the process that you go through in order to get them to that end phase of, you know, a roof above their head, running water?
Sure. Yeah. So my position, it doesn't lend myself to doing direct case management as much as I used to with the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. Mm-hmm. However, I do, with that unique background, I know of many of the resources that are available to veterans, and they do call me directly many times. So I'm able to really, you know, by asking a few questions, I can kind of figure out the best course of action for them, or at least the first course of action, and who they should get in contact with. To sort of begin that process. What I would hope is that we could get them connected with our Homeless Veteran Registry, which is our statewide by name list of every veteran who is experiencing a housing crisis at any given time. And what we would do then is go through that list and talk about that veteran with all of our service providers at the table to address all the needs of every veteran's unique circumstance and try to resolve that housing crisis in the most timely fashion.
So. And I think we'll get back to the Veterans Registry in a minute. Sure. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Army Sergeant Ben Houtkuper. We're here with Army veteran and current Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Homeless Veteran Coordinator Ben Wilson. Ben, welcome back.
Thank you.
So Ben, you know, when we were talking about this earlier, what we kind of skipped over was, you know, what was it that got you to where you are now? How does one become a veteran homelessness coordinator? So I understand you were in the military before.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of an interesting story. When I got out of the military in 2013, I went back to school for my undergrad at Hamline University. And as part of my undergrad, I did a internship with the Minnesota Historical Society and the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Wow. Through the Historical Society. So as a part of that, I actually did research as an intern project on how to assist veterans with reintegrating, you know, back into normal civilian life once, you know, upon return from deployments. And in my research, I met some of the staff from the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. After the interview I had with Nathaniel Saltz, the program director, he asked me what I was doing when I graduated from college, and that's kind of how I got my foot in the door with in working in the nonprofit, and then eventually with the state.
And you were a service member before that. What did you do?
Correct. Yeah. I had held two MOSs, 11 Bravo and 19 Delta, which is infantryman and Cav Scout. I deployed to Iraq in 2011, 2012, and assisted with the drawdown of the war there, doing convoy security.
With the 1st Brigade?
Absolutely, yep.
1st Brigade of the Minnesota National Guard, Red Bulls. So, you know, and that brings us back to, you know, what we were talking about before, and that is the Homeless Veterans Registry. You know, take us through the process from, you know, when someone makes that call, says my brother or my cousin or this guy I know is, you know, staying with a friend right now, but just doesn't have a home. You know, what is the process?
Yes, there's a variety of ways that individuals or veterans can be identified. Many times it's through any of our county veteran service officers, which we have in every county statewide. Sometimes veterans can self-refer themselves through a 1-800 number that we have set up for the registry and with our partner organization, LinkVet, which is 1-888-LINKVET. And then also we have the registry application or documents, if you will, available on the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs website. Anyone can print out that form and simply fax it into LinkVet. All the instructions are right there on the form. And as soon as the individual, as soon as we get, you know, their signed Tennyson warning, we can begin to work with our partner organizations to address whatever the needs of that particular veteran are.
So, you know, what is, we talk about, you know, the homeless veterans, but can you tell us, you know, like, who is today's homeless veteran? Is it that kind of the stereotype that I guess I have in my head, which is, you know, the Vietnam, you know, Korea War era veteran, or, you know, who makes up our homeless veteran population?
Yeah, I would say right now the statistics on the registry show that the veterans, the bulk of them are aging veterans. They're kind of that late 50s to early 70s age group or a cohort, if you will. And but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's only that age group. We've assisted veterans as young as 19, as old as 99. And as I kind of mentioned previously, every veteran has very unique circumstances that are contributing to their housing instability. Mm-hmm. It can be anything from just a couple of circumstances that happen in their life, like a divorce or losing a job or, you know, their car breaks down, which contributes to losing a job, that can have really a ripple effect and end up causing an episode of homelessness among a veteran.
Is chemical dependency also kind of a contributing factor you see?
Yeah, substance use and mental health are definitely contributing factors, you know, in certain circumstances. I can't say that it's that it necessarily contributes to every circumstance of homelessness, but it does compound the effects of homelessness.
So what are you looking for out in for assistance? We talked a little bit about, you know, the housing first philosophy. Get the veteran into, you know, a roof over their head, and then kind of fix the problems, the causation. You know, how is Minnesota sitting for beds?
We continue to expand on our veteran specific resources. I know we just recently opened the Veterans East or Richard A. Brustad Homes, which is on the VA Minneapolis VA campus, which created 100 new units, all efficiency, single occupancy units for, we're really trying to target those exiting homelessness with those units. And the veteran and community housing who operates that has been very helpful in taking referrals from the registry to fill those units. We also have a variety of other housing developments kind of across the state, a lot of them located in the metro. Mm-hmm. But we're always looking for other opportunities with developers to build more and build our capacity.
So there's an opportunity here for commercial builders to come in and assist.
Definitely. Yes. And there are a variety of funding options through Minnesota Housing, and other opportunities as well.
Excellent. So when we talk about, you know, veterans and the numbers, now I understand that there's an annual survey that happens every year. You know, where are we sitting right now for numbers?
Yeah, nationally, you know, we've reduced homelessness by 46% according to our point in time count from 2017. Mm-hmm. We, funny enough, just had the point in time count for 2018 last night. So I was up late last night trying to assist our providers throughout the state with identifying veterans. Minnesota has actually reduced veteran homelessness by 56%. So we are still ahead of the national average, and we continue to accelerate those efforts as well.
So, wow. Yeah. When will we know where we're sitting right now for 2018? When will those results be back?
Typically, they'll come in the late spring or early summer for the state, and then nationally, late summer to early fall of 2018, we'll get an idea of kind of where we're at.
Mm-hmm. But you've heard the calls, you've talked with the groups. You know, where do you think we're going to be at?
I am optimistic that we are going to have reduced it even further yet. I know this last point in time count, we saw a 0.7 increase, which was statewide, three more veterans were counted in 2017. Hmm. But it might just be due to greater outreach. And also last year, they began HUD or Housing and Urban Development began counting doubled up households as well who were experiencing homelessness where they hadn't done that previously.
Excellent. Well, you know, if you had one opportunity to talk with a homeless veteran one-on-one, you know, what would you tell them about, you know, taking advantage of this opportunity?
I would say, don't turn down any opportunity to get connected with the resources that are available to you. There's a lot more available than you may know. And, any of the providers that I work with on a daily basis would be more than happy to get you connected with everything that is available to you.
All right. Well, Well, thank you very much. That was Ben Wilson from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. He is the Veterans Homelessness Coordinator. Thank you very much, Ben.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Major General Ben Correll, Ben Wilson from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Commissioner Larry Shelleteau of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk about the VA's efforts to reach veterans across Minnesota and a local nonprofit helping veteran entrepreneurs. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota Military Radio.com.